Ellen Prager wants you to care about the oceans. She's a writer and former chief scientist of the Aquarius Reef Base, the world's only undersea research station. Her latest book is called Sex, Drugs, and Sea Slime. At first glance, it might seem like a lighthearted romp through the world of weird and wild sea creatures. But Prager's fixed her sights on something bigger. She wants to remind people why the oceans are enchanting and why we need to protect them. She told Steve Paulson about a few good reasons we should care.
I don't think many people know how the ocean necessarily relates to human health, that it's the new frontier for drug discovery. There are already medications on the market, drugs on the market, to fight cancer, inflammation, pain that come from compounds from marine organisms, or that marine animals are being used as models to better understand human physiology.
Really? In what way, models to understand human physiology?
There's so many examples that it's even hard to pick one out. The squid, surprisingly enough, has very large neurons or nerve cells. And so scientists study squid nerves to better understand the nervous system and diseases that may impact the nervous system. There are fish that have low calcium bones. They're called ice fish. And so scientists are studying those fish to look at things like osteoporosis. The list, I can't even tell you how long that list is. There's already one painkiller actually on the market from the venom of the cone snail. It's called Prialt. And the real advantage of this is that people who are addicted or allergic to morphine can take this non-opiate drug from the venom of a cone snail.
Hmm. I mean, what's remarkable about this is these things would seem to be so different from our own species, Homo sapiens. I mean, the cone snail, the squid, and yet you're saying there's something that we share with them.
Well, there is. The other thing to think about is that these animals have been evolving much longer than we have, in a sense. They've been evolving for hundreds of millions of years. And so there are parts of their biology that we can learn from. And that, I think, is a really, for me, interesting look at why the diversity of creatures in the sea is so important, because not only learning about their biology, but now we're also looking at how can we model things we use in our society after them. This is a great one. There are people designing fan blades, you know, rotating fan blades based on the fin of a humpback whale.
Wow.
Because it's aerodynamic when they jump up. And so we're starting to model some of the things we make after these incredible systems that have evolved in the sea.
Huh. Wow. That's amazing. Well, speaking of the diversity of species, You mentioned in your book that you never realized all of the strange sex going on in the ocean. What did you find most surprising?
Okay, you had to bring that up.
You bet.
You can't resist. Well, again, you know, nature has evolved many different ways, not only for mating to occur, but for, you know, offspring to be produced and survive. So there are a lot of different strategies. I didn't realize all of these, in some cases, fairly odd strategies. Things like there are swimming snails that start as males, mate as males, they swap sperm, and then they change into females. Once they change into females, it's pretty handy. They've already got the sperm. They're ready to go. It's, you know, there's no gender problem, no relationship issues. Pretty good.
Are there enough males to go around then?
Well, you know, there's plenty of males because then they change into females. So when they're born, they're born as males. So
and they're all born as males and then eventually end up as females?
Yeah, they start as males. And then once they swap sperm, they change into females.
So what you're describing are species that change their bodies dramatically at times. I mean, to the point where you wouldn't even recognize them from one day to the next.
Well, they do. And that, you know, one of the very interesting things is, how do they do that? Another example of that that I think is fascinating is that there are a lot of animals in the ocean that can regenerate body parts. An example is the sea cucumber, which seems to be this docile log on the seafloor. But if predators threaten it, it's able to eviscerate, meaning it can eject its internal organs, which is, you know, kind of disgusting. It's like if a mugger came up to you and I and we sort of vomited up our, you know, lungs. But the advantage is they can use that as a decoy, slowly crawl away, and they can regenerate their internal organs within 3 to 5 weeks. Imagine if we understood how that works.
Yeah. There's another very strange fish that you write about, the hagfish, which lives, for instance, right off the coast of Maine.
The hagfish lives in sort of deep, cold, salty water, and it has sort of gruesome feeding techniques, I guess you could say. Really two claims of fame, its feeding and its ability to produce copious amounts of slime.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about the feeding.
So, they have a tongue that has sort of like two rows of teeth on it, but it's not very good for biting through scales or tough fish flesh. So they must find other ways to get inside a fish for access to its tasty organs and flesh. So they go in through the mouth, through the gills, and I'm sorry to say, the back door, in through the butt. They are shaped like eels. They look very much like eels, although they're fish, but they are long and fairly skinny, slippery, no scales. So they kind of slither in. And, you know, I will say, burial at sea, no longer an option for me. Hagfish. Hagfish.
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned there's a slime factor as well.
Oh, great slime factor. So their other sort of claim to fame is that when they are threatened by predators or injury, they can produce huge quantities of slime very fast. Within minutes, they could produce enough to fill 7 buckets of slime.
Do we pretty much understand oceans now, or are there still big mysteries out there?
Huge mysteries out there. You know, we're always discovering new species. Only something like 5 to 10% of the ocean has even been explored. There are species we haven't found yet, undoubtedly. There's plenty of animals we've seen at the surface, but we don't really know what they do day in and day out. If you think about it, whales, dolphins, even fish, we see them at the surface. We don't know what they do the rest of the day and night. And so it's a very hidden world from us, and because of that, we really don't know that much. Ocean research and education have not been a priority for this country for a long time. And in fact, like everything else, it's really taking a hit with what's going on in the debt crisis, and it continues not to be a priority. I mean, if you look at what we invest in space exploration, and I'm not saying that's bad, I'm just saying the magnitude of what we invest in space exploration is many times more than what we've invested in ocean exploration and research. And that's pretty sad, given that it's our one planet that's covered, you know, 3/4 almost with ocean.
What would you say are the most important things to do to try to save the oceans?
Well, I don't think there's one thing we can do to save the oceans. I think it's sort of a toolkit for success. It's a number of things we need to do. We need to cultivate ocean champions, people at the highest level in our government and in our local communities that are going to be champions for the ocean and recognize the importance of the oceans to their communities and to people and to the nation. We need bottom level grassroots education outreach. We have not invested hardly anything in that. Good examples in the Gulf of Mexico, the money coming from the BP oil spill, very little of it's going to education outreach, which I personally think is a huge mistake. We need marine reserves, not huge areas, but enough areas so that there are places where the ocean can basically take a rest from human activities and recuperate. These are no-take areas where the fish, you can't fish, you can't boat, so that you have other places in the area in the ocean where you can do that. We need better policies on fishing, better technologies to reduce bycatch, aquaculture policies that don't take wild fish necessarily to feed farm fish. Doesn't really make too much sense. So it's a suite of things. No one of those is going to solve the problems. But I think a big part of it is getting the public engaged. And that was a big reason for me to write this book, was to use the hook of these wacky creature stories, but to try and get people to recognize our connections to the invaluable resources the ocean provides and why we need to do better at protecting it and preserving it.
Ellen Prager is a writer and former chief scientist at the world's only undersea research station, Aquarius Reef Base, in the Florida Keys. She's the author of Sex, Drugs, and Sea Slime. Steve Paulson spoke with her.